So I need to apologise at the beginning. I've moved house, and I think the sound quality in this room is slightly less pinprick perfect than it was in
really?
The flat.
The sort of thing I can't detect at all.
I'm sure the listeners won't care.
Your highly attuned ears.
But I've got to say, boys,
something I can't.
Things have changed for me now. Now that I'm a homeowner, the main difference being, I moved in. I didn't know this when we bought the place. It's got, I don't know if you've got one of these, a soft closing toilet lid.
Oh, ooh. So does that mean it's got a slow hinge?
Yes. So you let it go. And it just slowly goes down and then just kisses the rim.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? It's just gently.
And it's changed. It's changed everything for me now. Because in the past, you know, I used to.
You used to slam
anger,
it.
I used to slam.
It was an absolute slammer, Ben.
In the middle of the night.
I angered what I just had to go through.
Yeah. You would slam down that rim, wouldn't you? And it wasn't a kiss so much as it was a headbutt, wasn't it?
That's right.
You'd be getting through a new toilet seat every 6 months or so, wouldn't you?
Well, that's right.
Because the
bulk, eventually.
Because the ceramic under unit maintains its integrity, doesn't it? But it's the... And you were getting increasingly harder and harder woods, weren't you, in your seats. You would have got teaks, mahoganies, cherries.
Yeah, very rare rainforest woods that I had
rainforest
to source
woods
illegally, actually, on the black market.
Then you're moving up to your metals and then your onyxes.
Yeah. And so on. But they just all eventually get shattered, wouldn't they?
The obsidian seat. The problem is, I then used a third-party toilet in fact, John Lewis.
Which you'd have thought would be equipped with...
The pillowiest.
Very tactful.
Exactly.
Especially because they're selling toilets and seats within that very shop.
Yes.
What they're selling is a lifestyle.
That's true. But these are front-facing to customer-facing toilets that these have a reputation to maintain, don't
they're
they?
They're very much customer-facing. You went through the main doors and they were just there.
Just there. And sometimes you're sitting on it, you don't know, is this a display toilet or an actual one?
And the answer is always, it's a display toilet.
It's generally a display one, but the customer service there makes you feel so comfortable that you just go for it. It doesn't matter, does it? We'll plumb that later, sir. Just relax and enjoy yourself. It's such a soothing place. So what happened there?
Well, I got so used to the soft closing toilet that I closed it with huge force.
So you've really developed the muscles as well on your toilet arm as well.
And so basically what I'm saying is I can't now use a normal toilet without totally smashing it closed.
So hang on. Are you telling me that your new toilet lid had such a sort of strong hinge mechanism in it that you still put that horse-like power into it?
Yeah, I'm still viscerally angry at what the universe has made me do.
Well, you're furious, aren't you? It takes your breath away every time, doesn't it? The indignity of what you've
you've
just been
and
through.
It bounces that force out of the bathroom window.
Yeah,
and it's gone, dissipated.
Yeah, it becomes a kind of sonic boom that goes into the atmosphere, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so they've had to adjust the flight paths directly above your house, presumably.
Yeah, sometimes you'll hear the pilot will come on the intercom, won't you, and go, "Excuse me, gentlemen, we are passing over Ben Partridge's house, and we are aware that
he's just had his Weetabix.
Yeah, and last night he had four courses of ham, four different types of ham. Obviously, he has to inform the aviation authority, doesn't he, what he's eating every night, so that flight paths can be adjusted accordingly. You should feel nothing more than a slight bump if you hold on to
the person next to you.
The person next to you.
Squeeze your nose shut, keep your mouth open, and cover your ears.
To let the shockwave pass through you.
Don't fight it. Fight it. Ironically, that's when the danger can be really quite real, if you fight it. So just remember, as long as you allow it to pass through you, we can all relax. But if any of you are, trying to fight it or remain tense...
You'll see that Gavin, our flight steward, has got very bloodshot eyes. That's because of his cavalier attitude to this part of the flight path.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you went to John Lewis, and you still you you've become accustomed to...
Well, I've had a lifetime of closing a toilet lid with a degree of... It's always, you know, on a normal toilet, it's always a bit of a nerve-wracking thing, right? Because you have to get it down, but not too hard.
Mm-hmm. No, I've had it when you get it wrong, when you've become accustomed to a certain toilet. I may even have talked about this on the podcast, I remember. But once you've become accustomed to a certain toilet and you go to a new one, for example, on a houseboat, a situation you're not... a situation where the physics and the plumbing are slightly different, things are arranged in a different way.
And you're on maritime law, there's all kinds of things to adjust to.
There's all kinds of different factors. Or you might be in the top floor of quite a tall, what's the word, when it's not modern, old.
Lighthouse?
The White House has its own protocols. Obviously, in the White House, there's a stuffed eagle.
I think Mike said lighthouse.
I did, but I'm very interested to hear about the White House protocols.
Well, in the White House, obviously, you've got the red phone, because every room in the White House has a red phone, doesn't it?
And you've got to take the nuclear football with you.
Up to. So was that a clincher for you actually choosing that property, Ben? Did you get to try it when you were looking around?
No, I was totally unaware, so it was a complete bonus.
Oh, what a lovely moment.
Because I would have thrown an extra 20-30k on the price, had I known.
Yeah. So you were sitting there in your new home, having your first sit-down toilet.
Yeah.
You're feeling good, you're a property owner.
Marking your territory.
You're, again, bowled over every time by the sheer... just disgust at what's just happened. You get up, you're furious because you think you've moved on in your life to a new phase, and yet you're still utterly just blown away by the horror.
Rolling into the bath to hose yourself down. Yeah. That's per.
And you slam it down.
Because that's the thing, Henry, wherever you move, you've always got the same ass.
Exactly.
Wherever you go, there you arse.
And it's always just behind you, isn't it? No matter how far you run, it's right on your heels. Well, it's not on your heels. It shouldn't be on your heels. But it's on your tail.
Yeah. You're constantly pursued by your arse and your shadow. They're very much a tag team.
Yeah.
Well, your shadow comes out of your arse, doesn't it? That's where it attaches.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Golly.
Well, congratulations.
Brave new world.
I appreciate you saying congratulations, but I find it strange that people say congratulations when you buy a property.
Mm. When you're wrapped up in debt for the next 40 years or probably until death.
Yeah, there's that. But also, it's not an achievement, really. You've just bought something.
Yeah, well, you own something. It's true that you own it, but you've got this debt. I mean, one thing it does mean is, Ben, you can sort of join a higher level of banal chat now, which is the kind of, I have a bloody mortgage to pay. So, yeah. And you can say things like, yeah, it doesn't pay the mortgage, though, does it?
Yeah, I can say that. I've not really lent into that yet.
Yeah, you can. You'll start. Yeah. You can reach for it in certain situations. For example, when complaining about something, you can say, I've got a bloody mortgage to pay, haven't I?
You've also got the gambit. You can always bust out that you might need to replace your boiler at some point. I mean, that'll always get people going in a back garden barbecue. You know?
Yeah. So what kind of situation can I bring that up, Mike?
Well, if just things are a bit dry chat-wise, you can just say, I think we might have to replace the boiler. And, you know, oh, that's it. People will be away.
I think
these days we're replacing. Do you know? I wish I hadn't bothered doing all those degrees, and this. I should have been a bloody heating engineer. Shouldn't I? I mean, he's probably three times.
You are putting on a silly voice there, but to basically replicate chat that you do dish out weekly in your own voice. I don't know why.
I was trying to distance myself from it.
There's no point.
I'm sorry.
By the way,
it was very transparent.
I see you taking Ben under your wing in this area because you are obviously the master of this, aren't you?
Mm,
I could see you sort of tutoring.
Can you
Ben.
Give me a little crash course?
Yeah.
Yeah, certainly in terms of sort of gambits and stuff. Because there'll always be people out there who know much more about these things than me, but I can set them off. Do you know what I mean? But when I just, you put up a new trellis the other day in your back garden, they're away.
Yeah.
Gas barbecue or charcoal, they're away.
I tell you what, the boiler is key because the boiler becomes this sort of huge thing in your life now that you're responsible for a boiler, Ben.
Right.
You are now responsible for a boiler. And you just have to start knowing things like, and horrible things can happen with a boiler. Like I had a horrendous incident with my boiler where it was on its last legs for a long time. By the way, one thing you'll learn is a Welsh phrase, Ben.
Right.
That I learnt from my father-in-law. I can't remember what it is in Welsh, but the English translation is...
My boiler's broken.
My boiler... My boiler is proper fucked.
What is it? What is it, Henry?
A house is a thief.
Oh.
How do you say that in Welsh?
I don't know, actually. I don't know what thief would be in Welsh.
He said that to me once. A house is a thief.
Oh.
And the amount of times that's come true. Now, I had a horrendous boiler thing. Happened once where... Basically, what my attitude to how to look after home stuff is kick it down the road because it might never happen.
Yeah. The old long grass.
Kick it down the long grass. Basically, our boiler became so problematic that it was all... Oh, here's quite a good skill that you develop, actually. There's two main skills you develop that make you feel like, you know, you're a man in charge of stuff. You got your shit together. One is knowing where the box is, where you press the button that relaunches the fuse for a section of the electricity in your house. Ooh. Do you know what that means?
Yeah, the fuse box.
Yeah. are you on top of that? I get an absolute buzz every time I have to do that. Every time
when you say absolute buzz.
Yeah. Well, not buzz. Yeah, that does suggest I'm doing something wrong, doesn't it? It's a serious buzz. But normally if
it's a bad place to keep your paddling pool. That same cupboard turns out.
As long as I wear a pair of wellies for the next week, normally I'm fine and, I stop...
Normally you're fine within weeks.
Normally I'm fine within weeks. And I haven't... didn't think I've actually blown up a toaster for a couple of years now.
I've not yet... I know where it is, but I've not yet opened it or touched it.
Getting in charge of that is a big moment. So what happened is an electrician will go, well, to fix these lights, I'll need you to... and I'm already ahead of him. I'm like, don't worry, mate. I've got my wellies on. I'm on my way. I pop down to the hall area and I switch off the electricity for that bit of the home. That's a big one.
So I've got that to look forward to.
Yeah, that's really, really fun, that. The other one is adjusting the pressure on your combi boiler. Have you done that yet?
I just want to make you aware, Henry, that in my previous rental flats, they did have gas and electric.
Are you sure?
We were under the impression you just had a single wood-fired stove in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
And that was that. You're a little mini turbine to charge a computer.
Well, I'm going to carry on telling you this anyway. You're implying...
And that, Ben, is the biggest lesson you can learn from the homeowner. You carry on regardless. You may have non-verbal cues that they wish you to stop, even verbal clear cues, as you just gave, you plow on. That's how you earn your badge.
Which is, you get under the sink, you adjust some little knobs and stuff, and the pressure goes up. But there was a point where every time the heating went on, the pressure was either too high, which meant I had to go under the sink and twist something for a bit. Or the pressure was too low, which meant I had to bleed...
Even he's bored.
No. Or the pressure was too low, which meant I had to bleed the radiators. Come on, that's got you interested.
Have we torpedoed the podcast by turning it into a...
So basically... There was a point
where... We whittled the audience down.
Every time I turned the heating on, pretty much, I'm trying a tactic here, which is you start again.
Okay, interesting.
Very good. Very good, yeah.
But I was literally... I'd spend a lot of my life with a pan standing next to the radiator with hot water shooting out the radiator into this pan. I was catching it. In order to readjust the pressure. but basically, they got to a point where our boiler was so problematic that... I got a boiler person to come round. He looked at it and he said, he basically hammered through the wall. There was a huge hole. This was in November, so it was cold. He hammered through the wall. There was a huge hole in the back of the kitchen out to the outside world where the boiler pipe went through to examine some stuff. And he basically went, right, he was in there for hours, and his conclusion was, he went, right, I'm sorry, I can't fix it now, I don't have the parts, but you can't use it, it's dangerous. And he stuck a sticker on it in my own home, a sticker which said, do not approach, or like, do not use this boiler, danger, and then left. So I was left in November, a hole in the house. There was a howling wind was coming through, freezing. And my boy had a sticker on it saying, danger, do not use. And they were, he couldn't help me over the weekend. And no one could help me because they didn't have the parts. It was absolutely horrific. That's the kind of thing you'll end up doing, just like, yeah.
Are you sure he was a plumber? He basically trepanned your house.
He got the bad spirits out. Something.
He may have been an exorcist as well. I think he was a plumber, but we wanted to be an exorcist. So whenever he had the opportunity, he would. Because he did summon those howling gales. I remember he summoned them with some. And he talked a lot more Latin than I was expecting.
Right, bean machine.
Let's do the bean machine thing.
Okay, so this week's theme, as sent in by Lauren from Bremen.
Thank you, Lauren.
Is snow.
Oh. We had four flakes of snow here yesterday.
I had some flakes of snow yesterday as well.
I had some snow yesterday.
It's a miracle.
It's a white spring.
Did you have much snow?
I only saw literally about four flakes passing my window.
Were they normal flakes? Because mine, it was more compressed. Large. They're large flakes.
Mm. And they were black.
They were black. I should have mentioned that from the start.
And they were winged.
They were winged. They were beaked. They were eyed.
They hovered outside my window. Hovered. Which I've never seen before. They hovered and screamed at me.
And they were worm in mouth. The things appear to be nesting. Absolutely terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
I once drove to a gig in North Wales, in Bangor, I think.
Lovely.
Me and the comedian Mike Bubbins. We did the gig.
Yeah.
Smashed it, obviously.
But Ben, apart from the toilet lid, how did the gig go?
Hey, hello.
Hi, my name is Henry Packer, and I am available.
After the gig, mm-hmm. we repaired to a travelodge.
Lovely.
And shared a family room. Him in the double bed, me in the weird little child's cot.
Anything other than that would be an outrage to nature.
And I'm imagining you woke up clinging to his chest the next morning, curled into a little fetal position.
So then it was time to go home. Overnight it had snowed a lot.
Yeah.
So we were a bit trepidatious.
Mm-hmm.
And the road back is not a great road.
No.
So I was driving my Daewoo Matiz.
You were driving what, sorry?
My Daewoo Matiz.
I don't really know what that is, but it doesn't sound like it's built for handling Snowdonia, Brecon Beacons.
No, it's like the least good car for that. Yeah. And we were going along, and it was fine. And then there was a snow plow in front of us. That was doing some light ploughing and also gritting the road.
Ah, yes.
And I was behind it, and it was getting quite annoying because the grit was bouncing up into the window.
Yeah.
And it was just getting on my nerves.
Mm. Even though it was saving your life.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
So then I overtook the snow.
Holy crap.
Vehicle. And started driving off. And Mike said, I probably shouldn't have done that. I thought it was fine. And then within 90 seconds... We were spinning like 720 degrees, just round and round.
Yeah, because there wasn't any grit, was there, in front of it?
No.
Yeah. It was almost as if it was actually doing a sort of vital public service.
Serving a purpose.
And Mike knew it was going to happen as well. As soon as I turned the corner, he said something like...
He assumed the sort of crash position.
He said something like, here we go.
In that situation, grit is the... Grit shooting out the back of that truck is the opposite of, you know, the stuff that James Bond shoots out of the back of his car.
Mm.
Out of the back of his car.
It's saviour pellets.
Safety. It's saviour pellets.
Yeah.
And you were like, screw you.
You're going to ruin the paintwork. Plus, I can barely hear Celine Dion over the sound of the track.
Yeah. I've got a Daewoo. It's as impressive as it is light on consonants as a word. Daewoo. This'll be the Daewoo. Mate. And then you were spinning, and then were you trying to style it out?
But as I spun, I made the sound Daewoo. Which is what it's named after.
Oh, this will be the Daewoo, but not the Daewoo I was expecting.
You were panic punning.
Panic punning. So were you then, obviously any spinning body will burrow itself either down or up. Which way did it burrow? Did it helicopter up or did it drill down?
Did you launch?
Did you launch or burrow? Which was
it? What was spectacular was that, I think actually we just did a full 360. We came to a stop just facing perfectly forward, and we hadn't hit the hedges on either side. It just like we did this perfect pirouette essentially, and then carried on driving. So in a way, had it been on in like a Fast and Furious movie, it would have looked incredible. But the difference being that Vin Diesel wouldn't then feel physically sick for the rest of the journey with terror.
Would be shaking.
Yeah, exactly. We were very lucky. We were very lucky because it was bad. It was bad driving.
You nearly killed Bubbins.
No, he'd have been fine.
He would have been fine.
I don't think a car crash would put a dent in Mike Bubbins.
That's true.
Yeah, I tell you what. What happens with me around the car is I have such a sense of how society expects me to be conversant with the car and how it works. Mm. And it's very old fashioned. It's a load of nonsense, all that stuff. But I still feel there's a pressure there. To the extent that if I'm put on the spot in any way, for example, I can drive the car fine. Mm-hmm. I basically got the same thing my mum had. She doesn't drive that much anymore, but she used to be able to drive really well. But if you asked her what she was doing, she had no idea. She had pedals? Pedals? What do you mean? It's not a piano.
But she's using them.
She's just not aware.
And never had lessons, just pure instinct.
Never had lessons. Well, it's how they did it in the old days, isn't it?
You do go into a kind of mental state where you're not thinking about what you're doing. I understand that. You're sort of doing it automatically.
Yeah.
Because if you have that thing where you're driving and then you suddenly have a conscious thought about, like, how wide is this car? And then you're just fucked.
Exactly. Then you're fucked. And can I tell you, I had a very similar thing when I was playing a flute duet in a school concert with
whilst driving.
It's the first of its kind.
And I thought, hang on, this is too ambitious.
This drag car scene has got out of hand.
It's too late, Henry. Go, go, go. The engine's running. Just go. Press the pedal.
Get blowing.
Get blowing and check your indicators. Check your mirrors and blow.
And James Galway's in the boot. Is that what you're doing?
James Galway's tied up in the boot. He got wind of the idea early doors. We realised we've got to silence Galway if this is going to happen. He's not going to like this. He's head of the Woodwind Union. We need to tie him up until the event's finished. Then we can release him into the New Forest, and it's up to him if he can make it out alive.
He can prance amongst the fawns with his golden flute
and a bassoon full of meat over his shoulder.
He can befriend the woodland creatures using his woodwind skills and take it from there. We know how it works.
Yeah.
He'll turn up in a couple of years with a crown made of leaves.
He'll hypnotise them. He'll trick them to enter a magic tree and they'll never be seen again.
I did a flute duet with, it was me and Alex Rotsley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Alex Rotsley.
Still doing 30 minutes practice a day.
Oh yeah, he's keeping it going.
You gotta stay sharp.
And on stage in front of all the parents and teachers and stuff, I suddenly became like, I'd been doing it fine. I suddenly was like, hang on a minute, I'm blowing through a blooming metal tube here. What the hell's that about? Bloody hell. I was like, Henry, shut up, stop it, the voice in your head. Stop it.
This is absolutely absurd. Who wants to hear two flutes at once?
No flutes is normally enough for anybody.
I think it was the Piper of Hamlin. How am I going to lead a bunch of rats around with this fucking racket? No, but like...
You got the yips, basically.
I got the absolute, yeah, so I got so self-conscious about it.
But that's why flautists always move in pairs, you see, because one of them is always going to get the yips.
It's just insurance, really.
And the other one, yeah, trying to work out how air's moving in and out of his own windpipe.
Oh, yeah, like when you start thinking about breathing, that similarly goes wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, look.
You've got to keep that stuff in the unconscious bit of your head.
Yeah.
It's all the same, isn't it? Operating a car and operating your own body, it's the same stuff. It's basically a piece of technology that doesn't have a manual in the case of the human body. Ugh, fucking hell. But isn't it? Yeah, but basically, we're always operating these things. We don't quite know how they work.
We don't clean them as often as we should.
They don't have a felt case, which they probably should. I don't have to scrape myself down on a chilly winter morning, which is nice. But if I had to, I would. That makes sense.
Yeah, that works nicely, doesn't it?
That does work nicely, doesn't it? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, but that's right. I get very tense around. So around the car, I will forget stuff that I know how to do. So, for example, obviously, I'm very bad under the bonnet. I can't do things under the bonnet.
And that's both you and the car. I was sort of making a joke about you being bald there, but it didn't really come off.
What? Oh, I've come off it, mate.
See, under your bonnet. You famously wear bonnets all the time to cover up your bonnet.
So you want the audience to believe that I'm either a big baby or a Scottish man. And under his bonnet, he's bald.
Yeah, or a sort of Georgian tuberculosis-ridden author. Something like that.
Or just someone taking part in an Easter bonnet parade.
Yeah, fucking hell.
So we weren't supposed to mention your bonnets, were we? On the
we weren't supposed to mention my bonnets. Well, that's thrown me. I'm not very good under the bonnet. Yeah, because I'm bald. Yeah, and I suppose under the bonnet of my car, there's just a big shiny vacant area, is there as well? Which I'm trying to disguise with a comb over of old bits of piping and metal to make people believe there's actually an engine in there as well. Is it? Yeah, you're laughing now. If I told you how much you spend in a lifetime on shampoo, let me guess, I wonder who would be laughing as much. And now that you ask, I do still shampoo the fleshy area just out of habit. I do. Actually do.
Do?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. No, I think my thinking is if you keep treating it like a normal area, it'll become normal again. No, I don't treat it with shampoo. I don't rub shampoo onto it, but I do, when I'm doing my shower gel, I will stick a bit on top as well, just out of habit.
Well, you should wash your head.
Yeah, I wash my head. you know what? I've got a greasy head.
Oh, God.
There's a head-shaped grease patch on an armchair.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
What you need, you know those, you only go on a train and they have those removable kind of bits that your head rests on.
Mm.
You just need to put those down.
That's what I should do. That's why they're removable, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. A little. Well,
I didn't ever remove them, but they can be removed.
I tell you what they do after I've been sat on a 3-hour journey, mate.
Burn it.
Fucking burn it. You can see your face in that shit. It's so greasy.
There's someone waiting at the station just for you to, the second you're out of the seat, just tear it off and burn it in front of your eyes.
You know the texture of a thin paper bag that's had a good croissant in it for a bit?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I leave sofas and sort of with my greasy head. And then I was having a nap on a sofa at my parents' house the other day, and my mum said, Henry, do put something between your greasy head and our pillows, please. our cushions. Do put something between your greasy head and our cushions, please.
Do you know what those things are called that they put on seats?
I don't know.
They're called anti-macassars.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've got loads of macassar at the back of my head. my head is covered in macassar.
Molto macassar.
Molto macassar.
Well, that sounds like the first bit of bean merch, doesn't it? Potentially.
And three bean salad anti-macassar.
So an anti-macassar is a perishable thing which you put on an armchair or whatever to deal with head grease.
Wikipedia says... An antimacassar is a small cloth placed over the backs or arms of chairs or the head or cushions of a sofa to prevent soiling of the permanent fabric underneath. The name also refers to the cloth flap collar on a sailor's shirt or top, used to keep macassar oil off the uniform.
Oh, what's macassar?
What were they using the macassar oil for?
Do I produce macassar oil then?
Macassar oil was an unguent. Unguent?
Unguent? No.
Unguent. Isn't that a cow?
An unctuous thing. Sort of that's an ungulate.
Ungulate, there we go. We're getting tangled up.
Macassar oil is an unguent for the hair, commonly used by men in the early 19th century.
I see.
So it's basically kind of
like a
gel. There you go.
So do you guys, because you both have hair, do you not make greasy marks on
I don't leave
then?
Trails of any kind.
You don't leave trails of any kind?
Well, I think, Henry, that the head oil probably ends up just through our hair a bit more. So there's more area for it to sort kind of spread out and cover.
Because my hair oil is emerging from the pores on my head optimistically every day, thinking... Yeah. Off to work, darling. Time to grease up some of that thick, bushy... Oh, what the hell? There's nothing here. Oh, God, I'm going to have to go and live in
I'm
that
have
sofa.
To gloss this sofa.
I'm going to gloss this sofa up nicely. Because that's all I know. All I know is glossing. That's all I've done.
Yeah.
And all the oil particles before me have done. That's quite good as well, isn't it?
Well, it's a bit of character work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
I was a quite weird experience in a snowy park. It was a long time ago. I was going for a walk with my girlfriend at the time and her dad. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been the first time I met him even. And we went for this walk in this snowy park, snow-covered park. And as we're walking along, a couple of little kids, you know, little scamps,
yeah,
as they do.
Urchins.
Little urchins.
Yeah.
One of them lobbed a snowball at me.
Yeah.
And I think it was all a bit of fun. I was like, oh, you cheeky scamps.
But now it's gone down my neck.
It's gone down my neck. And I'm with my girlfriend's father. It's a matter of honour now. So I fight all of you children to the death to prove to him that one day I could be...
That I will keep his daughter's neck dry. It's all any father wants.
So I chucked a snowball back at the cheeky scamps. Chucked a bit of a snowball back. Good carried on walking around this park with my girlfriend and her father, wanting to obviously impress him and come across well. And the little cheeky scamps wouldn't let it lie, would they? And they chucked another snowball at me. Oh, this one... quite hard, and I wanted to talk to my girlfriend and her father. I was a bit annoyed this time, and this time I was like, come on, I got a snowball, really quite, just chucked it at him quite in a serious way, as if to say, you know, that we've had our fun, but leave us alone now. Carried on walking around the park, and at this point, the little sort of urchin, sort of their number swelled, and there were suddenly quite a few of them, and they were kind of running down the side of the path, kind of, they were teeming suddenly, like around us. It was in this park. They were like running from tree to tree. They were like, it was quite scary. You know, a bit like in a Western when you walk down the central path of the town, you know, the one street town that all Westerns have.
Yeah.
And you're just looking to the left and right, and there are kind of people dashing between the buildings. And it's like,
I'm thinking of the English soldiers being ambushed in Last of the Mohicans, is what I'm imagining.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's it. So they're kind of, it felt like they were kind of clambering up trees and emerging from duck ponds. And, you know, is that a swan or a child with a swan hat? That kind of thing. It was like, and it felt like they were kind of...
an enormous swan-shaped snowball with my name on it.
In which case, I would be honoured to die at its frozen chili beak. it's a marvelous thing. And I was like, I was starting to sort of panic, and I was gathering more and more snowballs now and chucking them at these kids. But meanwhile, the strange thing was that my girlfriend and her father were walking along as if sort of oblivious to this thing. It was a bit like Last of the Mohicans, but only I could see the Mohicans. But it became this weird psychodrama where a couple of them was sort of emerged from behind a tree and whack me really quite hard with the balls. And at this point, I had a sort of adrenaline burst, which was like, Well, there's two things going on. It was, one is I wanted to impress my girlfriend and her father. And secondly, I had to defeat these children as a matter of honour. And I was gathering up loads of snowballs. I was like, and I remember I did a kind of volley where I like got like three of these kids. I was like, doo, doo, doo. I was like, don't mess with me. I can take you, you know, I can take you on. But what it was like was, it was like, you know, in a film when one guy, it could be a military film or a zombie film, and one guy goes, I'm going to stay behind, you guys carry on.
I'm going to slow them down.
I'm going to say something like, you've got Professor Barbara, she has the antidote in her rucksack. The main
That's
thing
the
is
mission.
That, the mission is get Professor Barbara, get her to the, you know, the military installation.
On a paddle steamer.
And I'll take them on. And then what happens is you cut to the guy who's taking them on. And he's like, come on. And he's, you know, shooting them. And he's taking down more than you'd expect. And there feels like a moment where you're like, hang on, maybe he's going to actually survive this, even though, you know,
the odds are stacked against, but yeah.
Maybe he's going to actually survive this, kill them all, and, you know, reunite with Professor Barbara on the paddle boat, steamboat. and everything would be fine. And so I had that moment where I felt like I was actually, I could take on all these kids, but then more and more of the kids were joining them, more and more snowballed. And basically,
wave upon wave of virtue.
Wave upon wave. There came a point, though, where I was so adrenalized, I sort of ran into a sort of clearing, it felt like, and they were all around me, and I was just launching snowball after snowball after snowball after snowball after snowball in a sort of circle. And I was gathering up the snow and chucking it while making the next snowball in one hand, and sort of, I became like a sort of, basically the equivalent of one of those huge machine guns where there's like two guys feeding the magazines in and one guy operating the machine gun. I was one of those. Looking out. But,
Did they then start wheeling up one of those tennis ball firing machines, which they were just filling with snowballs?
That was when I spotted the tennis ball machine being wheeled up by like six kids.
And you could hear the distant rumble of an Apache helicopter coming into view.
Yeah. And that was when I spotted the old decommissioned Napoleonic cannons that are a display feature of this particular London park.
As a Londoner, you knew how to operate.
As a Londoner, I knew how to operate them. All Londoners are trained in that. Going back, obviously, hundreds of years from the time when it was encased, Napoleon ever did conquer Britain.
Yeah.
All Londoners were trained to become undercover Napoleonic cannonmen to take down the vile Frenchman's regime from the inside. Luckily, it never had to happen. But I had those skills. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, one thing led to another. All I had to do then was compact snow into cannonballs, put it down the end of the decommissioned cannon.
And then watch as they slowly melted.
Because
they were, after all, decommissioned.
They were, unfortunately. The D in decommissioned really... Yeah. Bit me in the ass big time. So it just turned into this weird, but by the end it was so weird. I was running around like a madman, launching snowballs at these kids, and they were like coming, swooping down in sort of waves and peppering me with them. I was absolutely peppered in snow. And then we emerged from the outside of this park, and me and my girlfriend and her father, we never spoke of it. I never ever mentioned it. This time when I sort of went, I basically went sort of, but by then, it was like, you know, I was sort of war feral.
Yeah.
And she just never mentioned it.
I never mentioned it. She never mentioned it. It was just really this really weird moment. I still sort of get flashbacks to it occasionally.
The relief her father must have felt when she told him that you two had gone your separate ways.
Yeah. And I think he had that conversation with her. Went, it's probably for the best, darling. Mm. Hung up. Sat back in his armchair. And looked across to the other armchair.
Where there were 30 urchins.
Where there were 30 London street urchins. 30 London children.
With cold hands.
With very, very cold hands.
Each with a brand new curly-whirly bar in their hands. Thanks, sir.
Will you release us today? Soon. I will keep deploying you until my daughter has married
a dry neck.
Top corporate accountant.
Okay, should we do emails?
Emails.
Yeah. Thank you for all your emails. If you'd like to contact us, the email address is 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. Jenny from Scotland gets in touch.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Dear Beans, have you considered creating a pissing tigress jingle?
Mm-hmm.
May I suggest some calm Zen spa-like music with the sound of some gentle trickling water? Mm-hmm. Oh, is that the relaxing sound of a babbling brook? Or the flow of some steaming tiger urine? But with an undertone of aggressive punk rock too. Kind regards, Jenny."
It's a strong pitch.
Strong pitch.
We could probably do that.
Mm.
I like that. I mean, she's suggested the actual musical. We've never had that before. Someone suggesting how you interpret it musically, Ben.
Do you want a bit of...
That is unbelievable.
That is incredible. Amazing bit of skill.
That is unbelievable, Mike.
It's quite a good big cat, isn't it?
How the fuck do you do that?
My mother's a lynx.
That's what helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. You should know that. You've met her.
Yeah, I should have remembered that. I mean, you dress her up, don't you?
It takes bloody hours. Yeah, that's why we don't wheel her out very often.
Yep.
Yeah.
You could use that to get yourself... Have you ever used that to get yourself out of a sticky spot? I reckon you could.
Yeah. If I find myself hiding in a bush somewhere from an attacker, then I might bust it out.
Or if you're being approached in a dark alley or something, you hide behind a bin if you're being mugged. Go, "I've got a tiger." I've got a tiger.
Full disclosure. Just so you know. And he's very poorly trained.
And then they go, "But that sounds a bit more like a leopard."
Yeah. Yeah, he is a bit like a leopard. Don't mention that to him, though. Because you want to rile him.
Oh, golly, just to take a load off. That's better. And relax. Wait, what's that? No. That's not a restful babbling brook. That's tiger piss. Welcome to the Pissing Tiger Zone.
Oi! It's a tiger! When the tiger piss, she doesn't miss. I'll piss on your face. Piss on my face!
It's like a really scary carpet.
Callum emails. He writes, "Dear Beans, I'm sad to say that despite my many childhood visits to Marwell Zoo, I have yet to be pissed on by a lioness, tigress, or indeed any representative of the big cat family."
What has he been pissed on is what I wonder. It feels like his territory's already been marked by something else.
Well, I think, you know, can I just tell you quickly, what he's suffering from is Famoob Pabat.
Go on.
He's suffering from Famoob Pabat. Which is a fear of missing out on being pissed on by a tiger, which is something that a lot of people have nowadays.
He writes, "Whilst visiting family in Western Canada circa 2006, we visited Calgary Zoo and spent some time admiring the hippos. Most grazed, whilst one was doing impressive, if clunky, barrel rolls in the artificial moat. After a few minutes, the gargantuan water horse heaved itself out onto the grass, and with the torque of an overcranked windscreen wiper, used its stubby tail to fling its dirty green offerings across a viewing platform filled with expectant children, flustered pensioners, and my own mother. Squeals of delight and screams of horror blended into a dung-induced cacophony. Many ice creams were ruined, and Mum got through half a pack of wet wipes trying to get the stains out. I was mercifully spared the indignity of the besplattering, as I had been crouched, pressed up against the murky glass tank, trying and failing to get underwater photographs of the majestic beast in its watery element. There remains hope in me that the hippo did it knowingly and with humorous malice. Much love, and keep on beaning, Callum."
Nice. I like the sound of his mum as well. It's someone who's carrying around ready for action packet of wet wipes at all times.
Enough wet wipes to de-dung yourself, even if a hippo goes at you.
Mindset. That's the way to live. I feel like he might have, he may not have got dung, but I feel like a bit of hippo-y musk has landed on him.
So he has been marked.
I think he's been marked. I think that's why. And the tigress knows to stay away.
Incredibly, we've also received this email from Rosie. Dear Beans, I've been listening to the multiple accounts related on your podcast of lionesses and tigresses pissing on children at Marwell Zoo. I felt duty-bound to write in to tell you that it's not just their big cats who get up to that sort of thing. Oh. On a visit to Marwell when I was about 11, I and my entire family narrowly escaped being shat on with some force by a pygmy hippo.
How does a pygmy hippo... I'm interested. I love this stuff. I want to know how it, a pygmy hippo can shit on you.
She says, we were by the fence of their enclosure and one came over to, as we thought, say hello. It appeared to be considering us with some interest, and having never been so close to one of these creatures, we were shouting and waving and pointing excitedly.
Yeah.
After a short while, slowly and deliberately, still fixing us with one, in retrospect, malevolent little eye, it turned round and presented us with its ample rump. We expected it to walk off, but it just stood there for a moment or two. At this point, my mother, obviously visited by some primal protective instinct which had been formed on the ancient African plains at the very beginning of human existence and survived eons of civilization to make itself felt on a warm afternoon in rural Hampshire sometime in the late 1980s. That's a long sentence.
It's a good one.
Said, calmly, but with distinct urgency in her voice, I think we'd better go over back here. We made it back over there in the nick of time. Just as the hippo, having, I now realise, taken its time to carefully assess the distance between us and it, began to whirl its tail around at great speed, like a propeller, while simultaneously relieving itself of a torrent of absolute foulest shit you can possibly imagine.
So that the tail is kind of propelling it away from the, sort of using it as a kind of...
It's got its own sort of hand fan.
It's incredible.
Luckily, we had moved just far away that the hippo, although possessed of an impressive degree of shit-flinging prowess... didn't manage to get us, and we escaped, shocked and chastened, but otherwise unscathed.
Wow, a little wiser.
And do you think, Mike, Rosie would have been tainted with the musk, even though she says she wasn't, you know?
Well, I don't know, because I don't know what's happened when she's gone to the tiger enclosure. I can't answer that question without... Got to be scientific about these things.
She hasn't said whether she has or hasn't
so
been.
So she needs to, at some point in her own time, Rosie, please, when you go down, if you go to the tiger enclosure and let us know whether or not the tigress pisses on you or not, and if she doesn't, then you know that you didn't quite have the escape you imagined.
Can I say, I've seen the pygmy hippos at London Zoo, by the way. And I think it's a little bit of a con, because it's like...
They're just far away.
Well, that's what they tell you. They tell you, look at those huge hippos on the other side of this enclosure. Don't get any closer. They're the most dangerous animal in the world, you know. Don't get any closer. They're massive, aren't they? All the way over there. I mean, I can see one of them reading a copy of the Sunday Times. I can see that for scale. I can see that he's a tiny hippo. He can barely get his clogs. I mean, his
clogs.
He can barely get his hooves around the bloody culture supplement. You know what I mean? No, but it's a bit like, okay, they're fine, mini hippos. They're not really like wouldn't mind seeing some actual hippos, you know what I mean? These mini ones are obviously easier to maintain, they're easier to clean, they're cheaper to run. But, you know, I want a big, a good family sort of sized, you know, proper hippo that could have a little bird cleaning it and living on it. That thing, bird could sat on its back, could lift it off and take it back to its nest.
Wow, you've really slammed pygmy hippos there.
Yeah.
Well, it's one of the only animals that has a sort of fun-sized version which they can try and shortchange you with in zoos. And I'm sure if there were pygmy lions, pygmy tigers, pygmy giraffes, they'd be doing the same thing. If there were giraffes that didn't have a long neck, they'd probably have them.
Horses.
Horses. Well, next thing you'll be doing, there'll be horses and they'll say, oh, it's just a short-necked giraffe. And I'll be like, you know,
the world we live in, eh?
Yeah. There'll be chihuahuas and they'll be like, yeah, it's that's actually just a land-based pygmy haired great white shark. Oh, don't get too close.
Yedzi writes, hello, Beans. I hope you might be able to help me with a deeply disturbing experience that I had this morning. In truth, I don't have anywhere else to turn.
Okay.
At 5:14 a.m., I was woken by a woman's voice. I don't know what it said. It took me a while to come to consciousness. There was a second of silence, and then it said, oh, it is mice.
What?
It seemed to be coming from outside the window. Then a distorted voice from a walkie-talkie said something that I didn't understand. Disturbed, I got up and peeped out of the window, fully expecting to find the police investigating my flowerbed. But there was nobody there. Mm. This is great so far.
I'm riveted.
Yeah. So mysterious.
Absolutely riveted to the spot.
After some more garbled radio messages, I traced the sound to my closed, supposedly sleeping laptop. I was freaked out. Was someone trying to talk to me via walkie-talkie through my laptop? I opened the computer, typed in my password, and was met with something more upsetting than I could have ever imagined. A video was playing. A video was playing of two cassowaries wolfing down old dead mice.
Oh my god.
As they were thrown to them by a zookeeper. The walkie-talkie was on the zookeeper's belt. It was horrible, but I'm sure you can appreciate that my true horror wasn't at the content. Who could possibly have played this awful video on a closed, password-protected laptop in a bedroom of a sleeping man?
Oh my god.
Oh my god, that's frightening.
Spurbs
is coming for the listeners.
But what I want is, why was the person saying, yes, it is mice?
Was someone presumably an answer to a question from a cassowary?
Have you got mice this time? Yeah.
What is this? This is a vole or a true? What are we talking here?
But what's the specials today? Yeah. Is it mice again? Yes, it is mice. Cheers, keep them coming.
He says,
you're not recording this, are you? Yeah, all right, thanks.
I don't know what to do. Please help. And that's from Yedzi.
Oh, Yedzi. Poor Yedzi. Oh, the bell is tolled, I think, for Yedzi.
Yeah. Holy moly.
I mean, I think you are going to find yourself probably within a matter of, I would say, weeks rather than months, dressed up as a giant field mouse and being thrown directly into the gob of a mama cassowary. I'd get your affairs in order if I was you.
Yeah.
That is so often the advice we end up giving after someone's sent it in. Will writes, Dear Beans, I hope this finds you well. I have an observation regarding the discussion in episode 3 of series 4 about what hobbies provincial Exeter dads engage in.
Mm. It's time for Provincial Dad Chat.
Who's hit my bloody walking boots?
I'm not saying it's ruined the holiday, I'm just saying I asked for rum raisin.
Get your skates on, kids, otherwise we'll miss the inflatable session.
She's taking her mother to see Blood Brothers, which means more Top Gear time for me.
Why would I need to go and see a podiatrist?
Of course I've kept the warranty information, darling.
As a medical student studying in Exeter, on at least 3 separate occasions, my supervising consultants...
Yeah.
All of whom happily meeting the criteria of a provincial dad, after finding out that I play the saxophone, have what can only be described as press ganged me into joining their different village hall concert bands.
Oh, God, poor sod.
No,
oh, man.
Don't do it.
That's abuse right there.
With each one of them saying how desperately they're in need of a saxophonist.
No. No, 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 no. You can't do that. This poor kid thinks his career rests upon whether or not he can fill the tenor sax section of a swing band. So he's going to end up in 3 rural or semi-rural swing bands. There's not going to be any time for anything. He's to say goodbye to your love life, your social life, study even.
Also, rural swing is one of the most absolutely shit music genres there is, isn't it?
He knows that better.
Rural swing.
Saxophonist, he knows that better than anyone.
That'll be rural sax in general. A saxophone and the countryside have got nothing to do with each other. The saxophone is about the steamy, seedy, smoky, big city, baby. It's not about hens, is it? It's not about seed. Have you got enough seed for the hens? It's called Baker Street, isn't it? Not Old Witch's Craddock or whatever places in the countryside are called. Baker Street. Yeah, urban.
Imagine watching a hen eating seed out of the bell of a saxophone.
That would actually be quite a sight.
Makes me sick.
Especially if the other end's being played by a piglet. Then you've
you're
got
coming around to it now, aren't you?
Then you've got yourself a barnyard jazz ensemble that I would happily pay to see.
So there we have it. Thank you for all your emails. Yes, do send us emails. We always love them. freebeansaladpod@gmail.com. Now, last night, we were down at the Sean Bean Lounge. Mm. Of course,
we were.
Only Patreon members get to go into the Sean Bean Lounge. You can join at patreon.com/threebeansalad. There are various tiers you can join at. One of them gives you ad-free episodes. One of them gives you extra episodes. The top one gives you entrance to the Sean Bean Lounge, where we were last night. And it was another fascinating evening. And I believe, Mike, you have a report.
It was Kangaroo Court Week this week at the Sean Bean Lounge as we had the Bean Marshals round up every Sean Bean patron on the Sean Bean Most Wanted list, as decreed by Sean Bean. Those incarcerated for a dose of justice and good times included Taylor McKay, pillaging, Katie McBurney, loitering, Jamie Green, bean poaching, and Joe Velkovich, federal jaywalking. Louise Allen was found to have committed arson in the Queen's docks, the littlest bean boy docking in the Queen's arse, Green Planet Tree Services, impersonating a police officer, impersonating Elvis, impersonating a tree surgeon, Nick Whiskard, highway robbery, Maxine Gellibert, byway robbery, Lottie Hobbs, foldaway robbery. Erin Baden-Smith had forged a copy of Cheryl Boosfield and used it to blackmail Emma into pickpocketing Kirsten Foster, only to find she was wearing anti-theft trousers containing spring-loaded handcuffs. Elsewhere in the lounge were Sam Pollard, who'd been smoking in a non-smoking area, and Mark Johnston, who'd been not smoking in a smoking area. The notorious Lisa McGuinness had been potty-mouthed on Glebeland without a licence, and John Lamaday partook of a violin lesson whilst driving a heavy goods vehicle. Tim and Elliot Ramsey were in for the rustling of cattle, sheep and conveyancing solicitors. Other miscreants included Ali Sinov placing a postage stamp upside down, Luke Proctor licking a postage stamp while hanging upside down, and Olivia Neugeboren licking a postman upside down while hanging the right way up. Catherine Milliken committed cheese espionage, Lewis Salter medium treason, and Simon Neal didn't eat his greens. Throw away the key, I say.
Okay, let's work out whose version of our theme tune we're going to play us out. Thank you to everyone who sent in versions of our theme tune. Henry, can you give me a number between 1 and 14, please?
14. Didn't think I'd do that, did you? Yeah? I've thrown you completely, haven't I?
You got me.
You've probably not even got a 14.
Well, this one was sent in 7 months ago. It's been on the par for 7 months.
Crumbs.
It's from Rebecca. Hi Beans, here's my dad playing a sort of jazzy wine bar version.
Ooh.
Her dad's Richard from Hereford.
Lovely.
Excellent. Thank you. And thank you, Richard.
So it looks like we're actually finishing appropriately with some rural jazz, potentially.
Yeah, it works perfectly.
Some provincial dad rural jazz.
Lovely.
And also, there's been very provincial dad. Hereford is the sort of place that really gets provincial dad's tongues wagging as well.
Is it?
It being the home of the SAS.
Oh. What a rich furrow, isn't it?
It really is. So, this couldn't be more appropriate.
Yeah. So that's this week's episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.